The Blast from Our Past Network.
Hello and welcome back to Action Action, the podcast that watches all the fucking action movies. We put them on a giant list. We're rating them as we go. You can find that list on Letterboxd at Action Action. Wait, is it Action Action or Action Action Podcast? One of those two. Look it up. You'll find us. Yeah,
it's actually a little bit difficult to find on there.
Letterboxd is kind of hard to
boost that ranking. I was looking for it the other day to have a look at the list. Anyway, sorry.
No. That Please voice continue. You hear is my special guest today. He's been on the show many times. It's Andy Warchild.
Hey, guys. It's me. Warchild is back.
And he's here replacing James, who's just a lazy asshole. No, that's not true. He's busy this week. He's stepped out for today, and Andy was nice enough to come in, fill in for...
As always, it is my distinct honor to be here. Thank you very much for the invitation. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and you picked a doozy of a film, which we will get into. But we are part of the BFOP network. Make sure you go on, check out all the other shows. There's a lot of great content on there. We've got this 80s Kids Unite is a new sort of thing going on. I don't know if that's officially a BFOP. It's a cross pollination going on there. We've got podcasting after dark guys, guys from $2 Late Fee, and they do like a side podcast called Territory Marks about 80s wrestling, and all those guys are involved, and they're TV Obscura guys. So check that out. They just had their first episode, which was about the Garbage Pail Kids. A favorite passion of mine.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, check out the BFOP Network shows. Make sure you listen to all those. And before we get into Shadow Warriors : Assault on Devil's Island from 1997, we like to do a little thing on the show called Sink or Swim.
I know we do.
So Andy, what do you got for me?
So yeah, sure. Again, thanks again for the invite. It's always an honor to be here to contribute to the list. Right. So Sink or Swim. Lately, what have I been watching? A few weeks back, I watched a movie called Society of the Snow. It's a retelling of the story of Alive from 1993. I know we know that movie.
Right, the Bud Eaters.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Describe a movie badly.
They did what they had to do. It's funny because my understanding is that this one's based more directly on the memoirs of the people who survived it, and it's actually like spoke like in Portuguese, like Uruguayan type, the actors who were in it. And so it I don't know, it seems more genuine. I really enjoyed it. Like, harrowing story, obviously. But it was
for people that don't know, it's the plane crash,
right? And then the Uruguayan rugby team that crashes in the Andes and then gets failed rescue isn't able to locate them, so they end up stuck with nothing to eat for like a month, and they have to try and figure out a way to survive. It's actually more than a month. It was like mid-October that they crashed, and they didn't get back until just before Christmas, like December 23rd.
Wow. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, exactly, in the 70s. But yeah, great movie, really intense.
Like, this turkey just isn't as good as terrible.
It's like, I don't know, this movie did a better job than Alive of like really getting at the motivations and the justifications. Like, they're sitting there, they're trying to eat whatever's around, because obviously they're in this total desolate area up in like the glaciers of a mountain. There's nothing to eat at all. They're like trying to scrape like insulation off the inside of the plane, tasting it. They're eating shoe leather, they're eating their laces, and nothing like obviously is satiating that need, right? They're like spitting it out because it's toxic.
I mean, Guy Fieri always says that if you have the right sauce, you can put it on a shoe and eat that.
But I mean, then it shows one of them's just kind of like picking at a scab because obviously they were at like big trauma. So a lot of them have wounds that are healing and he like just kind of picks off the scab and then eats it. And oh, it's kind of like it clicks that, hey, yeah, we're made out of food. And there's a bunch of dead people that we didn't kill. So there's like food sitting there. But anyway, it's super interesting story. I really enjoyed the way that they put it together. Obviously, it's not an enjoyable story.
Right, it's not like a fun movie, but right, well done, right?
But very, very well done. So that is definitely a seek or a swim. I finally got around to watching Oppenheimer. I wished I'd have seen it in the theaters. Amazing movie, like really well done. All of the intrigue of how much trust that they give this guy, like they need him to create this weapon, but they're like, ooh, but he's a communist, is that gonna be okay?
Or he was, yeah.
Yeah, or like he talked to people. So it's really interesting.
Associations.
Yeah, like stuff that I hadn't thought about. Like it kind of hamstrung him, like he couldn't, like he felt like he couldn't speak up because he was already like under the microscope, right? Mm-hmm. So he wasn't allowed to like dissent and say, hey, you guys shouldn't be using this for that, because he had to like watch his P's and Q's because he knew that they were watching him because he had known communist associations. So it kind of stuck him. And then when he was done, when he finally started sort of speaking his mind, then everyone was like, no, he's a communist, he's bad. So interesting.
It was kind of convenient, right, to railroad him afterwards and sort of
exactly
use him as a scapegoat for certain things or whatever.
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. did a really good job playing that.
How do you go from looking like fucking Iron Man to that?
It was interesting. But that was a really interesting character, like assuming everything is about him when it's like, nah, these guys are thinking about other things, right? Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it as well. I don't know, I think it was perfect or anything, but it was really good. Reminded me of watching JFK, which we went and saw in the theater when we were kids.
I remember you were so into
that.
We were like children.
And a lot of this movie kind of reminded me just in terms of the way it's edited and all that kind of stuff. I mean, obviously Nolan has his own style and everything, but similar feeling movie to me in a lot of ways. But I really enjoyed it.
Well, I really like it's a really intriguing way of telling the story. Like it's like feeding you little bits of information and you're learning about the actual mechanics of the explosives as you're like seeing like the different characters unfold. And like even the meet cute between him and Emily Blunt is him explaining quantum mechanics to her or whatever, right? So it's like that's kind of cool that he can combine all this stuff. Like that's a good filmmaker right there.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing how he is able to edit that together and make it feel so propulsive.
Yeah.
Even though he's just like feeding you so much information.
Yeah.
It is a lot of information. I had to take a piss at one point when I was watching it in the theater, and it's like, well, when is a good time to leave? Because it's like a constant flow of like, feels like stuff
totally,
that you need to know.
Totally.
So, but yeah.
Yeah. It definitely helped knowing sort of some of the story beforehand. Like when they're talking about like the super, meaning like the fusion bomb as opposed to the fission bomb, like knowing a little bit of the history of that, and because they just kind of talk about it pretty quickly and they just refer to it as like the super, and it's like, well, we should pursue making this, and it's like, well, no, we shouldn't, the fission bomb's enough. And anyway, it helps to know, have a little bit of the background, because I might have been lost otherwise. It throws a fair amount of information at you, but really good. And then the last one that I'll quickly mention, which is kind of interesting, I got the opportunity to go to the theater the other day. I hadn't been since the last time I had went was for the most recent Indiana Jones, which is a different story altogether. But anyway, I saw The Beekeeper.
Oh, the Statham.
With Statham.
Don't tell me too many details, because we'll probably end up doing it on the show
in the not
too distant future.
And it's going to make me a total hypocrite, because there are a number of things that, I mean, it was entertaining, but I was not a fan. Like, I thought it was way too cheesy, and it wasn't enjoyable to me for some reason.
Then Statham as a beekeeper who kicks ass was too cheesy?
Well, It's the cops, the police characters, and how they have access to all these high-level things, even though they're, well, I guess they're FBI, but they seem to be totally, like, bungling everything and like, oh, my mom just died yesterday, but I'm going to continue to do this high-level work involved in the same situation, and it's like the call center thing. Anyway, I'm not, I don't want to spoil too much of it, but I wasn't a huge fan, but it was interesting to see that it's fairly highly rated.
Yeah, people seem to be liking that one.
So, yeah, I mean, certainly cool action stuff in there.
Maybe people
just
wanted something. And people are ready for different... I feel like people are ready for different kinds of movies now. Like, people are so tired of superhero stories and stuff.
Yeah, could be.
So it's like, oh, there's a Jason Statham action. Like, what's more reliable than that?
Fair enough. And it did. I feel like it's like... not quite like a Crank type situation where they're really going like all out in like the making it...
Right, yeah. It's not like insane or something.
Yeah, but I mean, like, take on an entire squad of highly trained army people and just walks into the middle of them. And in a lot of movies, like, they pull that off well. Like, in a John Wick or even in The Gray Man, like, you understood.
Oh, you fucking loved The Gray Man. Here we go.
You understood, like, it was shot in such a way that you understood like how he was able to take out these, even though it was hard to believe. But then when he walks into like the group of FBI guys and then takes them all down without killing them, and it's like, well, no, they're just kind of attacking them one at a time, like and I get it stuff. You're supposed to just throw it out, but like he doesn't seem... anyway, I'll stop. I'll let you see that, and I'm curious to get your thoughts on it, but it is a destroy for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Destroy.
Yeah, what have you been watching?
Well, you know, I've been watching a few things. I rewatched Sicario, which I hadn't seen since it came out. The Denis Villeneuve.
Benicio.
Yeah, Benicio and Emily Blunt again, and Josh Brolin. Did you saw Sicario?
I never
Oh, you
have.
Never have?
No.
Well, it's on Netflix right now if you
want
to
know.
Want to watch it. Man, it's fucking good. Okay. It's tense. It's really well done. Just really suspenseful. A lot of, you know, questions about what the hell they are doing as law enforcement about the whole situation with cartels and all this stuff. It has enough action in it to be exciting, but it's more of a thriller for sure. And just good performances. But yeah, I don't know. The way that he makes the movie is just very atmospheric. You feel like kind of on the edge of your seat the whole time when you're watching it. So
cool.
It was nice to revisit that.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out for sure.
And then I watched an 80s exploitation movie called Kill Squad.
Oh, that's amazing.
The tagline of which is 12 hands, 12 feet, 24 reasons to die. This is a movie where this guy who was a Vietnam vet, his house is broken into, his girlfriend is like raped and killed, he's fucked up and ends up in a wheelchair. And so these buddies of his that he was in Vietnam with, they all get together. He like sends out like a kind of distress call sort of thing. One of the guys organizes, he goes and finds all his buddies from Vietnam, and they all come in to be like, oh yeah, we'll deal with this situation. We're going to find the guys who did this to you and fuck them up kind of thing. It's a lot of kung fu scenes. When you know the song, Everybody Was Kung Fu Fighting?
Yes, yeah.
Literally everybody in this movie knows how to kung fu fight. Guys on construction sites, guys in the alley. Like, everybody knows how to fucking kung fu fight in this.
Okay, that's fun.
Kind of fun, but the movie is not very fun. I mean, the scenes get really repetitive. It's the same kind of shit over and over again. There's this an assassin starts showing up and taking out his buddies one by one when they're doing these, when they're going and approaching people and getting in these fights and stuff. There's this guy with a mask that starts showing up and like sniping them and stuff little by little, picking them off. The reveal of who the sniper is at the end of the movie is so fucking stupid that I kind of loved that part of it. It's so dumb. Yeah, I mean, not a great movie. Pretty bad, really, but you could do worse in terms of exploitation shit. There is some goofy fun in it.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Rewatched Heathers.
Oh, nice.
Hadn't seen Heathers in a long fucking time. Probably since I was a teenager.
Yeah, I remember watching that.
I'm renting it when I was like, you know, 11 or 12 years old or something like that. And it's all this shit about teen suicide
yeah.
and school
it's pretty deep.
Killings and stuff. Like a dark comedy.
Yeah.
Still pretty funny because everyone like plays it straight. Christian Slater and Winona Ryder and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Shannon Doherty, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, really enjoyable still. That was fun to revisit for sure.
Isn't there something new with Heathers? Like, isn't there a new production? Like some kind of...
I heard something about that. There might have been a new show
or... stage adaptation or something.
I don't... Now you say that, like, I think there was a new show, maybe?
Let me see.
Based on that, but I never saw any of it. You look that up. I'll keep blathering on here about shit I've watched. I did a Hostel double feature, Hostel and Hostel 2.
Oh, okay.
Because I hadn't seen them since they came out. I did not like them back then. But I really liked Thanksgiving, Eli Roth's new movie. So I was like, I'll go back and give these another chance. Because at the time it was in that whole torture porn era. And like, I didn't like the Saw movies. And I just, other than the first one. And I kind of just turned myself off to all that stuff. And so Hostel was deeply associated with that stuff, and I didn't like it at the time. So I went back, rewatched the first two. There is a third one that he's not involved with, but I haven't seen. The first one's pretty good. It's not. I don't think it's a great movie, but it's solid, and there's a point, like, kind of two-thirds of the way through the movie where things really start to pick up, and, like, you're like, oh, okay, he actually shows some skill here in terms of setting up suspense and... getting you like into what's happening and everything. It takes a while to kind of get there. Like you got to go through a lot of bro-y, we're in Amsterdam, let's fuck chicks and do drugs kind of shit. Which I realize he's making fun of these characters in one hand, but at the same time, it kind of comes across as like, yeah, these are the cool dudes, right? These are cool bros that you want to hang out with. And I'm like, I don't want to hang out with these guys. These are our
protagonists.
They're all like assholes. But yeah, that last third I feel like is really well done, and it's got a good ending. And so then the second one is kind of interesting. Like he definitely switches things up and doesn't just repeat exactly what he did in the first movie, but at the same time, it's kind of more boring of a movie as well. This time, the characters that are getting trapped are women characters, and it's not just like, oh, they're different sexes, so it's different. It's like they're different sexes, so there's like all these different things about it. Like they're not as easily ensnared by the same lures as the male characters in the first movie and stuff like that. Like it takes different sort of thinking to get them into the quote unquote hostel. But yeah, there's some interesting stuff he does in it for sure. The gore is good. It's really dark looking, and I don't know why. Like I watched them one after another and I was like, Hostel 2 looks really fucking dark where you can, in the dungeons things, you can kind of barely tell what's going on sometimes. So kind of weird in that sense.
Yeah.
Then I rewatched fucking Porky's.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Speaking of movies I haven't seen in a long time, I think I last watched this on a sleepover with Cousin Filth. You remember?
Yes.
Cousin Filth. That was a childhood friend of mine.
Are you talking about Cousin Fender?
Oh, sorry. Yes, Cousin Fender. I'm confusing Cousin Fender with Filth, right. Which is what Cousin Fender thought he was named. Yeah. Yeah. That's two different weird friend things there. Yeah, Filth. So like, I think when we were like 10 years old, we had a fucking sleepover where we rented the three Porky's movies.
That would have been a great time.
Amazing. Yeah. It's a weird movie. It's like, you know, it's a sex comedy.
Yeah.
But there's like not very much that's actually funny in it.
Does it hold up or is it like in awful poor taste?
Oh, I mean, it's in poor taste for sure. Yeah, okay. And I would expect nothing less of a sex comedy movie from the 80s.
Yeah.
And it's kind of one of the most infamous ones, right?
Yeah.
Like they look through, they have like the holes that they look through to watch the girls in the showers and all that kind of shit. So if you're, you know, if you're not prepared for that, you're not going to have a good time with this at all.
Yeah. But it's hard to go back to those. Like the perspective has changed. I watched Meatballs not that long ago.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And Bill Murray essentially sexually assaults someone in the scene. And in the next scene, they're like flirting and laughing and having a good time and dating.
It's a different time.
It was
assault was just part of dating.
But that's the thing, right? Like a lot of times you can be like, oh, I can forgive them. But like you're watching it, you're like, this is gross. This is making me feel uncomfortable. And then they just that it's like, oh, that's accepted behavior. Just do things against someone's will until they bend to your will. They're just having a rowdy good
time. You know, the boys will be boys, Andy.
Yeah. Anyway.
I think it's kind of fun. Like, it's riotous, and it's just like, it's like a good time, even though, you know, it's rowdy and everything. Like, it's a good time with the characters, even though it's not like, yeah, I was not laughing very often.
Okay, that's enjoyable.
But it's still like, oh, it's fun antics kind of thing.
Yeah.
There is some weird race kind of stuff in it. It's set in the 50s.
Okay.
So, like, there's some weird race stuff. I think Bob Clark, the director, who, like, also made Black Christmas, the slasher film, and fucking Christmas Story, the family Christmas movie. He's got a really weird filmography. He made this as well, all around the same time too, just like bouncing between all these genres. I think he's trying to like adeptly talk about race stuff in this, but I think people, a modern audience watching it, wouldn't necessarily get that. I think they'd just assume the movie is being racist, but I think he's actually trying to sort of address some stuff like, this is the 50s, this is what things were like,
kind of thing. Okay.
Last thing I mentioned, I watched this detective movie with Denzel Washington from 1989 called The Mighty Quinn.
Ooh.
Where he is a Caribbean cop on an island.
That's fun.
Yeah, it is a fun movie. It's not an amazing movie, but it's a fun detective little jaunt. His childhood friend is accused of murder, and he's kind of trying to investigate that, and there's other weird shit going on the island and political stuff. Yeah, it's like a sweaty neo-noir kind of movie, different setting for that kind of thing. So I enjoyed it. It's by no means amazing, but it's a fun little movie. So check that out if you're in the mood for a detective thing.
Cool. Will do.
All right. So that's enough of that shit. Cool. Let's get into today's fucking film.
Sweet.
Shadow Warriors: Assault on Devil's Island. Let's hear a trailer if there is one, James.
There must be.
And if there isn't, we'll hear some Tim Tooler. I can't talk. You know what I'm talking about. Some Home Improvement.
No fear. No rules. No equal. Meet the Masters.
So what's it going to be, huh? We have a team here or what? Let's move.
An ex-Navy SEAL whose temper is dynamite.
Follow me.
An undercover expert who's always dressed to kill.
Nothing to it but to do it.
A demolition ace who's got a talent for destruction.
This is a covert operation.
We are being held hostage.
Devil's Island is a fortress.
The only way in is underwater.
The team's dead.
When the government has a job they can't handle,
this calls for decisive action.
They call the experts.
Need your help.
I am not going back into that jungle.
Sure you are.
No, I'm not.
You know you are. You always do.
We're not landing until I see the hostages.
Can you see her? Safe and sound.
Men die in our business. That's our business.
The time is right now.
You won't see them. You won't hear them. But when innocent lives are at stake,
she will die a slow death.
And terrorists are in control.
Get out!
Somebody's gotta take charge.
Move!
Terry Hulk Hogan, Shannon Tweed, Carl Weathers, fighting for everyone who can't fight back.
Duck!
Assault on Devil's Island.
All right, so Assault on...
And we're back.
We are back. So this movie has a few titles it's known by. It's sometimes known just as Shadow Warriors.
Yeah.
Sometimes just as Assault on Devil's Island.
Right.
Sometimes as Shadow Warriors Assault on Devil's Island. And also sometimes apparently in the video rental market as Shadow Warriors 2, because they made another movie called Assault on Devil's Mountain. And for some reason when they eventually released them into the rental market... They like reversed
the order
and was like Devil's Mountain is number one and Devil's Island is number two.
Just
for confusion's sake, because when we were watching this, I was like, it came up as it said Shadow Warriors 2 on the screen. I was like, oh shit, there's a first one we should have done first. And then I looked it up and I was like, oh, okay, no, there's a second one that is sometimes labeled as the first one.
Yeah, because the free YouTube link that I went to, it had like the DVD buddy in the corner.
Yes, that's where I watched it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. I don't think this is streaming anywhere exactly. I think you can buy
YouTube.
You can buy it on Amazon.
Oh, is that right?
And you can stream it on the Roku channel, but only in the United States.
Okay.
So, you know. But yeah, so Shadow Warriors Assault on Devil's Island, 1997, directed by John Cassar, starring Hulk Hogan, Carl Weathers, R.I.P.
Yeah.
Shannon Tweed.
Yes.
Martin Cove. Trevor Goddard. Billy Blanks. Billy Drago. So quite a few known entities in this film.
For sure. And Carl Weathers was our window into this. I have buddy, fan of the podcast, Rob. We were thinking together, what's a good movie to do? And on the same day that Carl Weathers passed. And so we're like, oh, that's a shame. Wonder what Carl Weathers stuff we could find. And he found this, and I had never heard of it. I had no idea it existed. And I thought, wow, that is a stacked all-star cast for a TV movie. This is going to be great. So I was excited to try it out. And yeah, here we are. But Carl Weathers, man, like I was kind of expecting going into it that it was going to be something that he knew what he was doing. So this is 97. It's around the same time as Happy Gilmore.
After Happy Gilmore, but yeah.
By that point, was that after Happy Gilmore? Really? Because he plays an old guy in Happy Gilmore. And in this movie, like he looks like healthy. He looks ripped.
No, he's in good shape.
He's in great shape. Yeah. But man, what a likable character. Like I thought he was going to be phoning it in or like.
Oh, he's giving it his all.
Yeah. And he's nailing it. Like he's such a likable guy. Like he is so charismatic. He captures well on screen. He interacts well. So it adds.
I mean, he's by far the best thing in this movie.
Oh, for sure. But the contrast of him and poor Terrence Bollea is his name. Hulk Hogan.
Terry Bollea.
So. Yeah, just the contrast between the two of them.
Oh my God.
It's hard because I don't want to be a jerk. Like, I don't want to be totally cynical. But a lot of the enjoyment I got out of this movie was trying to watch Hulk Hogan act. I just had this giant cynical grin on my face because I had read, like, oh, this was what was the wrestling agency he was involved with? Because this was after he left WWE.
So this whole movie was a production, like he was a producer on it, and so was Eric Bischoff,
right?
Who was the guy that at the time was running WCW.
WCW,
and this
is
from the era that the height of these Monday Night Wars between WWF's Monday Night Raw,
exactly. So
and
this
WCW's
was a big deal.
Monday Nitro.
So I was curious. They must have done a ton of promos at the time, like put the commercials in.
Oh yeah,
the
commercials were going on TBS.
Do you remember seeing these?
No, because at the time I was very loyal to WWF. I saw some WCW stuff like people were like, oh, we're watching WCW. But I was like, no, I'm not a WCW guy. I'm a WWF guy, which
fair
was
enough.
Just silly. I should have been like, I'm a wrestling guy, so I should watch whatever. But
no, fair enough.
So I didn't see a lot of it, and I've gone back and watched a lot of that stuff. But like at the time, I wasn't into it. However, I did read that yes, they advertised this, and it was played, I think, right after Nitro, when it debuted.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, there's Ted Turner was supposedly going to bankroll more, make it into a series, right?
Yeah,
so like when
that's
you get to the end
really
of the movie,
what it looked
like
they
like
were
a,
trying
yeah,
to
it
do.
It feels like it's a backdoor pilot,
it feels,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and the thing that I had read had said that they were really trying, and especially with Hulk Hogan like getting a producer credit, and he's really trying to get that dramatic sort of thing out, and it falls so flat that it's hard not to just kind of chuckle at it. Like he cannot pull this off. Just trying to be the mystical martial arts and all these these fancy blow darts and yeah, that type of thing.
He's into warrior culture. Yeah. He's got like Maori tattoos. Exactly. Even though he's not Maori.
But listening to him try and speak in like a low volume, like, I don't know, his voice doesn't sort of register. He's got that deep voice. I don't know whether it's too much steroids or what, but it doesn't, you can't hear him when he's trying to speak in a whisper. It comes through like intermittently. It's really hard to understand what he's saying.
I feel like he was like, I'm just going to give such a subtle performance.
Exactly.
Could be really understated in this film.
And it's funny because you only hear him talking when he's doing like wrestling promos,
right,
when
he's
like
shouting at you.
Exactly.
All the time. Yeah, brother.
Brother, Hulkamaniacs are going to come down on you. But listening,
that doesn't work for me, brother.
Listening to him try and pull off this like subtle, quiet thing, it doesn't land. And that's one of the things I got to admit, and yes, it's cynical, but that's fun to watch just because
absolutely,
it's awful.
I mean, that is the fun to have with this movie.
Yeah.
I think the movie is pretty, like, from my perspective, spoiler alert, I think the movie is pretty bad.
It's bad.
And I mean, yes, you have to kind of adjust for, it was made for cable in the 90s. You know, it's a whole different thing that was going on at that time with made-for-TV movies, but it's still very awful. And I think, yeah, the enjoyment you can have out of this, yes, Carl Weathers, I think, is good and is doing the best he can with this material.
Sure.
Martin Cove is fine, too, here from Karate Kid. But yeah, Hogan, I mean, the funny stuff to me is watching Hogan with his fucking wigs. Oh, my God.
Oh, what are they doing? He's supposed to be this elite Navy SEAL. Like, you don't backdoor get into the Navy SEALs. You need to dedicate your life. But he's got these, like, these
golden tresses.
Yeah. Anyway, it's confusing. Like, seeing him in his formal uniform with that flowing, like, rat's nest coming down.
Well, this is the point, Andy, where he is such an experienced and, you know, long-term, whatever, special forces Marine, whatever the fuck he is, that, you know, he can do this with his hair. No one's going to tell him how to fucking cut his hair.
I guess so. No one's going to tell him, hey, you have to use, like, the arsenal that's provided. You don't get to bring your blow darts. That's going to interfere with the completion of this mission. But anyway,
right, yeah, because there's that scene where Trevor Goddard is the guy who played Kano, by the way, in the original Mortal Kombat movie.
Really?
He's gonna shoot somebody, and Hogan's like, no, let me use my
exactly
blow darts.
Yeah. Yeah, and then he goes and he gets the blow dart out of his neck. So you think, oh, he's cleaning up his tracks. He's going to take his dart with him. But he just tosses it to the side. So I'm like,
why did you bother taking it out?
Yeah, I guess he's restricting the dosage that he gets of the sedative. I don't know. Anyway.
Oh, wow. You really thought about a good explanation for that.
I'm trying to retroactively figure out why he's doing this. But also Billy Blanks. Did you mention Billy Blanks?
Yeah, Billy Blanks is in this as more or less just like
as Billy Blanks.
A henchman. Yeah, well, he's like a henchman. For the bad guys.
This is, circa his big Tybo thing.
Yeah, this is around the Tybo.
Contemporaneous.
He already had, like, I found it weird that he's in such a small role in this. Because he doesn't really get much, does he even have any speaking in this?
I think he does.
Maybe
a line or two. But his main thing that he's there for is the big showdown, the big fight.
But he was also, I guess, like, the coordinator on the film.
Coordinator or whatever,
He's kind of doing double duty in that sense. But at this time, he'd already had like a video, straight to video, like action movie career where he's like the main draw of the movie.
Yeah.
So it's a little weird to see him on a made for TV movie as a background guy here.
Yeah.
I mean, he is a big deal henchman, like you're saying. Like he's like the big fight for Hogan. But he doesn't have any character. He's just a guy who's like a bad guy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But obviously we weren't going to get a huge fight from Billy Drago. He's a little bit later in his career here.
Right.
And of course, Billy Drago, ton of fucking movies, a lot of B movies, always always a bad guy. He's in some bigger movies too, like he's in The Untouchables and stuff like that. But
yeah, he did a pretty good job with what he was given. I mean,
he's fine,
the plot
yeah.
is not super complex or believable or...
Well, I didn't even read the plot. Let me read that real quick.
Oh, right. Sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah. When one of Mike McBride's men goes rogue and takes a group of gymnasts hostage to Devil's Island in exchange for the return of drug lord Carlos Galindo... The SEALs face their most perilous assignment yet. That's one sentence.
Wow. Yeah, one of the gymnasts, evidently a young Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh, really?
I did not
notice that.
I read that initially, watched the movie and completely forgot about it, and then read it afterwards and I'm like, oh yeah, I guess she was in there somewhere. I didn't go back and look.
Screen debut.
Yeah.
Now a bigger star than everyone in this
Yeah,
thing.
That's true, combined.
Even Carl Weathers. But yeah, so Hogan's at the height of his NWO wrestling right. shit at this time. So, and I think, at least according to Tony Schiavone, who was the color guy on WCW programming at the time, he said it was the fourth highest rated cable movie ever. So it did like decent numbers and stuff when it was aired.
Did you have a look at the budget too?
It was only like $4 million
or
something, right?
It was dirt cheap.
Yeah.
They got a lot of value out of $4 million, like tons of explosions.
A lot of explosions.
Carl Weathers'
fake minigun.
Yes, the minigun was awesome.
Yeah.
That thing was so cool. He uses it to pierce a door to save the gymnastics team.
Yeah.
So cool. There's like the shark scenes and everybody's like snorkeling.
They got a good value for their four million.
They did
pretty well on the budget front. And
the planes, there's like two different float planes that they use that they commissioned that they got flying. Like that's something. That's some value that they got, I think.
I guess at the time, there was this deal in place where, you know, based on how good it did, maybe it was going to be an ongoing series, which, you know, the end of the movie makes you think that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, they're handing in their Navy SEAL crosses or whatever it is so that they can make a private investigation. We need to use SEAL tactics to help real world people.
We're
going to
be, shadow warriors. look, coming soon. But yeah, no, it never materialized as a show. They only, I guess, got to make one more movie out of the deal. I guess apparently at the time, Eric Bischoff was like, yeah, Ted Turner has committed to putting forth money for a show if it does this well. And then it did that well. And Turner's like, well, I never said that. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah, he's like,
well, maybe he saw
I'll bankroll another one of these films because it did well enough.
Yeah.
But
like that just would have been further adding to the embarrassment.
Oh man, Hogan.
Like it's terrible.
Well, it's so funny too because so he was one of the first wrestlers to sort of make it in movies. Like there was other ones who had come in and mostly had smaller parts and stuff. Terry Funk around that same time as Hogan was getting into movies, and Roddy Piper did movies and TV stuff,
right.
and even Bret Hart did some TV shit. But like, Hogan was, you know, the biggest fucking star in wrestling at the time.
Yeah.
And so when he started, you know, he did like No Holds Barred, which we've done on the show.
Yep. Classic.
Amazing. and, you know, he had these other theatrically released films, Suburban Commando and Mr. Nanny and shit. So he was a big deal, but he was always terrible in these movies,
yeah.
which is so funny to like, I think they think, oh, okay, he's a star in wrestling. It's going to translate to movies, which makes sense to a degree. But like you watch him in wrestling and he's able to command a crowd and hold them in the palm of his hand. He has all this charisma. He knows how to like tell a story in the ring, even if he's not actually a great, like quote unquote wrestler, like doing moves and shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
He knows how to tell a story in there. He knows how to get the crowd's attention and hold them and all that stuff. Whether he's doing a shitty promo, his promos are really shitty if you go back and watch them.
Right?
But like at the time, everyone was fucking eating it up. So say whatever you want. Like it was working. But then you go watch him in movies and you're like, fuck, he's bad.
Yeah, really bad.
Like, he's so bad. And of course, like, you know, we have like The Rock and you can argue about the quality of The Rock's movies, but like,
but you
he's
buy
a thousand
him.
Times
yeah.
more charismatic on screen, right? Than Hogan.
Yeah.
Or Cena or whatever too. And like Batista is obviously turned out to be a pretty good actor.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, it's just weird to look back and be like, yeah, Hogan was the first big wrestler in the movies, and
wow,
they're fucking terrible.
These movies are a different class of movies with the wrestlers that are actors.
He had to crawl so they could run, I guess.
Yeah, that could have been it. They just didn't figure out how to cast or how to write for these people coming from professional wrestling. But it was something else, like the cheesy lines that he had, the tarot. So I don't know, should we go through the plot a little bit?
Yeah
So they're starting out, the first is they're going to, I don't know how it works, they're going to take like a drug lord on an island. I guess it's supposed to be in the States, so they're still within the rights of the federal jurisdiction to go and take this drug lord.
Yeah, they're gonna capture him.
Yeah.
They go to, it's like both movies, they're, I was like, is this the assault on Devil's Island? Because they're
it kind of is.
They're
yeah.
like on an island at the beginning, and then of course the end is the actual assault on Devil's Island. Yeah. So we get some real kind of commando type scenes where they're storming the base.
The part that I wanted to talk about was when they were preparing, when they were in the plane, like our introduction to the character. Well, first we get introduced to Hogan.
Hogan doing
when
his, he's doing like, his Tai Chi or whatever on the beach at night.
With a bunch of like dollar store tiki torches. And
some good stuff.
That's his routine.
We know that he's a warrior, but he's also like, you know, he's enlightened.
Yeah, he's got this mystique about
him. It's a real Seagal type.
Yeah, that's what he's trying for. But even Seagal can pull that off. And
way more.
Yeah. But the one guy's pre-raid routine is to pull these tarot cards. And Hogan, oh, I don't really believe into that stuff. Pull one for me. And it's, oh, it's the death card. That one's for my enemies. Oh, it's terrible. And then the lines that him and Carl Weathers have a line that they share together. Nothing to it but to do it. And then they limply thump their forearms together, and it makes like this dull slapping sound.
Well, I think that whoever, you know, the director was probably like, we need something like from Predator when Schwarzenegger and Carl Weathers grasp hands, and it's like the most powerful handshake of all time.
Yeah.
Except this just didn't.
That's what they're trying to go for. But the other piece is that it doesn't seem like Hogan could even come up with the lines. I had to watch it a couple of times. Like, it seems like he's almost getting prompted from Carl Weathers, who delivers it perfectly. Nothing to it but to do it. And it seems like Hogan is fumbling over the lines. Like, it's supposed to be something that these guys have done like a million times or whatever. But he's like, nothing to it. Like, I don't know if it was that or if it was you just couldn't hear him because he was trying to talk at a low register, and his voice only seems to function if he's yelling promos and talking about Hulkamaniacs. And but
he'd be talking about 24-inch pythons. Or
yeah,
this, like,
exactly.
Not even worth his time.
But that was interesting. But then they go on the raid, but of course it's an ambush. Fraker is in league with
Billy Drago's
character. Yeah.
Galindo,
yeah, that's right. Fraker, I don't know how you can be in league with Galindo.
That doesn't work for me, brother.
But they still get out. They still manage to get out with Galindo, but Fraker's still there.
Yeah, they get Galindo, but Fraker remains behind, and he's like, well, I guess I'm in charge of shit now.
Yeah.
This is Ozzy. I love his, like, poofed up spiky hair with lightning bolts shaved into the side of his head.
Yeah, he's got that look figured out. Martin Cove, being the leader of this elite SEAL team, tries to advocate that they should be going back and trying to get Fraker, but of course the superiors say, no, don't worry about it. But then Billy Drago gets word through his lawyer back to Fraker that you better rescue me, otherwise you're not going to get paid. So then
he has to pull off another scheme in order to
So the scheme involves
get him released,
kidnapping J-Law and her crew of gymnasts. So somehow I don't know
this
where
this is such a weird plot idea. Like, okay, I get it. It's a Marines. They storm an island. They fucking take a guy hostage or whatever. They capture a guy. That makes sense. And then the other part of the movie is like, okay, now we need a second half. Shit, what's happening in the second half? What if he kidnaps gymnasts?
Yeah. Well, that's his ploy. He holds them hostage so that they can be exchanged for Billy Drago's character. Teenage girls, yeah. But, I mean, Hulk Hogan was going to go back to the island anyway. Like, he essentially quits the SEALs, and Martin Cove sends Carl Weathers out for him, being like, well, I'll go bring him back after he quits. So I guess he quits regularly, and they just need to give him a couple days to cool off.
Cool off, Hogan.
But he was going to go
cool
in.
Cool off, McBride.
Against orders, he was going to go back in because he was so betrayed by Fraker. But it turns out they get the approval to do it anyway. Well, no, the government wants to just give the hostage. So they send Martin Cove.
Yeah, they're
going to
give the hostage.
Yeah, they send Martin Cove back.
But Cove
with,
is like, fuck this.
Yeah.
I'm going to team up with McBride after all.
Exactly.
But we haven't even talked about Shannon Tweed.
Yes, of course.
Softcore royalty in this
right
film.
Around the time that she's doing Detroit Rock City.
Oh, yeah, right. One of her biggest films.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she was, for people who don't know who Shannon Tweed is, she was a playmate, big, like, Playboy a bunch of times. Weirdly, I was reading about her while watching the movie, and I was like, she did a spread with her sister in Playboy, which I thought was weird. Oh. That's really weird.
Yeah, it's a little awkward.
But yeah, she did a whole shitload of softcore movies at the time, which was a big thing, which I think modern audiences would be like, what? What is that?
Yeah.
So like, well, you could rent movies that were kind of real movies, but kind of had a lot of sex scenes in them, sex scenes. So she was in a ton of those. And then she married Gene Simmons from Kiss. Right. And so she was also in, she was in a few bigger movies here and there kind of thing, small parts and stuff. But yeah, mostly she's known as a softcore actress.
But
and this
what
cut
even
that we
is she in this movie?
I think she's a DEA agent who's undercover trying to go after Galindo as well.
Okay.
She's doing an amazing Russian accent at
was
the beginning
awesome
of this movie.
So, and this is the type of movie where you can't tell, like, it doesn't make sense. Like, her awful Russian accent, like, I guess it's supposed to be so that we know that she's not actually Russian, but you don't know if they're trying to say, like, yeah, she's not Russian, she's just pretending because she's DEA, or if they're like, yeah, this movie's cheap enough so that we don't care, we know she's not speaking Russian very well, but it's fine. Like, it's hard to tell how much of it was intentional versus how much of it was
I'm pretty sure she's just not doing a very good accent.
Okay, fair enough, because that's the thing. I mean, like, you would think that Billy Drago would figure it out, like,
yeah.
But yeah, so she's there to exchange diamonds for some kind of drug deal. It's part of her undercover bust. But that's the thing. The way that it kind of plays out, like, you're not supposed to know what she is. Once it all starts going sideways, she ends up teaming up with Hogan. Yeah, she's got a gun on him. And it's like, oh, what's she going to do? And she says,
yeah, well,
oh, you got a duck.
They keep kind of getting into that where it's like, you know, she shows up and, or does he bring her to his house?
Yeah.
She helps him escape.
Yeah.
From
he,
the
goes AWOL from,
he goes
from,
AWOL
and goes
she's
back
at his
home.
Place.
Yeah.
And he's got his nice house and she's like, was that what you always do with guests? And he's like, I've never had any guests.
And she's
fucking
just walking
poor,
around.
Poor loser.
She
Hogan.
Fortunately, she brought around her emergency lingerie that she wears around his house. But
yeah,
I borrowed one of your shirts so that I can walk
billowy,
around.
Billowy shirts.
Scantily clad. And then look,
so
look at your safe.
Like when he's like, I've never had guests, I think it's supposed to come off like, oh, what a lone wolf.
Yeah.
But instead, it comes off like, what a sad loser. Nobody can even
absolutely
come to his house.
Yeah.
But so we do have a scene with her while she's on the island with Galindo where she fucks him.
Yeah.
While she's undercover.
Yeah.
And in the version we watched, there was Shannon Tweed titties.
Yeah.
But in the movie, like in the version that was released on cable,
yeah,
that was not in the movie.
Oh, interesting.
Like they didn't have that stuff. That was too, you know, Turner's networks were not saucy like that.
Okay.
Which is why Nitro eventually kind of probably lost against WWF because WWF started getting really raunchy and like really sexual at the time, right?
The Attitude Era,
yes.
Right.
And Nitro didn't do that kind of programming really.
Yeah.
And I mean, they pushed it as much as they could, but they kind of had limitations.
Yeah.
So yeah, the Tweed scene is in the movie when it was released on video for in the rental market. That was in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's on YouTube. We watched it on YouTube.
We did.
So we did, there were some titties in this film. But yeah, so she comes to his house and then at that point they're kind of playing it like,
Motivations? Yeah, is she actually DEA? Because she's kind of sneaking around while he's asleep for 36 hours.
Looking in his cupboards and shit.
Yeah. Yeah, and she's trying to find his guns. She takes out, she unsheaths his big Bowie knife.
That is not a sexual innuendo. She literally unsheaths his big Bowie knife.
Yeah, and then, but no, she talks to him about it afterwards. So, oh, okay, she's on the level, I guess.
Yeah, they kind of just play it up for like a few minutes. Like, ooh, is she suspicious?
Yeah.
Then they just like, no, she's part of the team. That's cool.
So, yeah, that now all this is going on. Like, they were kind of gearing it up for them to go back to the island anyway. But then they get the ultimate motivation that the gymnasts are all kidnapped by Fraker. And so I have a question.
But Hogan's also upset because he had to leave one of his dead Marines behind.
That's right.
And you never leave a Marine behind. So
that's
he's going back to get that corpse.
That's true, yeah. And to get revenge from Fraker. But right, I forgot the main motivation was go back to bring the man back. And it was the guy with the tarot cards, too.
Right, yeah. He shouldn't have drawn that death card. It wasn't for his enemies, it was for himself.
Exactly. That was the point,
man. You can't draw the card for someone else.
This movie is always steps ahead of where you think it's going to be. But there's a girl that helps with the... she's the one who's involved in this plot that gets... this gymnastics team is supposed to be going for a cruise. And, oh, the cruise has booked a special flight out to Cuba or something. Oh, okay, we all get on. And the coach of the gymnast says, hey, we're going the wrong way. And, of course, it's revealed that it's Fraker. And this lady has been in league with him.
Yeah.
What happened to her?
She just disappears.
She just disappears. Like, it was building her up to be something, and then it was nothing. I suspect...
And the coach of the gymnasts, who, by the way, I don't know his name off the top of my head, but he's, like, often a henchman in different action films.
Okay.
He's in Passenger 57. He is in Die Hard 2 as one of the guys
at
the Anakin Skywalker. So he's the coach just for that one scene, a really crappy little scene. And then... Yeah, he's like, what's going on? Where's the plane going?
Yeah,
this
and then
is not
he
the right
disappears.
Direction.
Yeah.
Well, she shoots him.
Oh, right. On the plane. Yeah. That's right.
And so then that was that. And then she's like, yeah, she seems like she's going to be a henchman going forward. And
I
but you just don't see her again.
That there was a plan for her and Shannon Tweed to get in a scrap.
Oh, yeah. That would make sense. Yeah.
But that either wasn't shot or they cut it for time or something.
Yeah.
There was another question that I had because Shannon Tweed is going off about her diamonds. She wants to get back to the island because she is on the hook for these diamonds that she brought as part of her plot to get the drugs or something.
Galindo.
Did she ever get those back?
Let's just assume yes.
Okay. Because I don't know if it brings it up.
Doesn't acknowledge it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But once they go back to try to get the hostages and Martin Cove comes, like you were talking about, on the boat, and he's like, yeah, I'm supposed to give them Galindo. And he does. He goes in and gives them. And of course, it's a double cross. They're not going to fucking give up the gymnasts.
Those
valuable gymnasts.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're going to do with them.
They're just going to drown them.
they're happy letting them drown in a cage.
Yeah,
they're in a cell where they've got a timed bomb that's going to go off and all this shit.
Yeah, and it floods the room. But luckily, Carl Weathers is there with his giant Gatling gun to like open up a hole in the door and let it drain out. That gun was pretty cool. Like,
it
with the budget
cool. I mean,
that they have.
It doesn't, like, remotely look like it's actually firing because it's like this. I think it's like a digital effect at the end of the barrel.
Yeah.
Or if it's not, it's just like some kind of. I don't know. It looks really phony, but it was awesome that he's walking around for a good chunk of the movie.
Totally.
Ripping shit up with that thing.
That thing was
awesome.
He's
like, I was in Predator and I didn't get to use that.
Yeah.
Only Jesse Ventura got to use that. So I want to have. If I'm going to do this movie. I want to use a minigun for most of it.
Yeah, the minigun was awesome.
It is one of the more fun aspects for sure of the action. Because like the action is mostly not great, but that was at least a fun little thing to have in there.
I don't know. I enjoyed it. Like there's like these little dudes in like they're entrenched in their gun area and shooting, and everyone's having a hard time, and then Carl Weathers just walks up and unloads on them. I don't know. I had a big grin on my face when I was watching this almost the whole time. Sometimes it was cynical, but sometimes something cool like that would happen and it was a genuine smile.
Well, there's also like once there's like some of those guys, like you're saying, that are really entrenched and they're fighting, and there's like, I don't know, one other army guy that's with them that has, never even gets a name, I don't think, who's shooting at them. And then Carl Weathers comes from like a different angle with a bazooka and just fires a rocket into those guys.
They had some cool weapons there's for the budget. There's
a few stunt moments and stuff that isn't too bad.
Yeah, they had some scuba diving. They had an actual shark attack that, I mean.
Mike McBride says, I always knew, like, that's how, what's going to happen. A shark's going to get me one day. She like pulls the shark tooth out of his back.
That's right. And it's good luck to have a necklace with the shark that got you. And that's just his kind of weird mysticism, that it works well for him.
Also funny when she's talking to him and being like, you know, he shows her his fucking gun room, which is just a giant vault full of machine guns and stuff. And she's like, oh, you have a blah, 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 whatever, some gun. And he's like, you know warrior culture? So ridiculous.
Classic.
Yeah, but so the assault is all right. It's not bad once they get there. We get introduced briefly to Billy Blanks. He's a henchman guy. He's the one who ends up having the big showdown with Hogan on the roof of the building. It's not amazing. Like, Billy Blanks definitely gets to do some cool moves. Some
big
and stuff.
Spinny flippy kicks.
A lot of flippy kicks, yeah. A lot of it is shot badly, like in tight, and you don't get a good sense of the fight all the time. But at least you get to see a few of the big Billy Blanks, almost Van Damme-esque kind of roundhouse kicks and stuff like that.
Well, and it's all on location, too, on this giant, like, fortress off the coast of Key West, I guess it was filmed at Fort Jefferson. I looked into it. But, yeah, it's an actual place in the States. There is a real place called Devil's Island, but I guess it's off the coast of French Guiana. Okay. So this one's supposed to be in the States because they were still...
Well, that just shows you this movie's bullshit.
They were still in like the federal jurisdiction, so they could go and get this drug lord. But I don't know. Like, I feel like that's a cool location to be able to shoot on for the budget that they had. And they get Billy Blanks doing his big flippy kicks. I don't know. I enjoyed this probably more than I should have.
Martin Cove probably, I feel like he could have used some better action moments. Like, he's a little older in this movie and stuff at this point, but like, he still looks relatively tough and everything. He's got his couple of handguns.
He's shooting. He's dual wielding, and there's people like with rifles looking down sights and missing. And he just kind of aims and arbitrarily fires dual wield at them and takes them down.
You gotta love a dual wield.
Yeah, but he's like they're pointing in different directions. He's got it. It doesn't look very Navy SEAL. It doesn't look very strategic, but it looks cool.
Yeah, there's nothing overly strategic about anything they do in the film. I mean, we also didn't talk about the scene where the helicopter comes and tries to shoot them while they're at Hogan's house.
That's right.
Three of them. So him and Carl Weathers and Shannon Tweed are there. And Hogan crushes a coconut in his hand, and he's trying to get them to also crush coconuts.
That's
in their
hand. Training. Like, he's being Master
Shannon
Yoda.
Shannon Tweed is going to be able to crush a coconut in her hand. It ends up getting shot out of her hand from the guy in the helicopter. But I thought that was so funny. Like,
you can do it.
Come
if
on,
you focus
if you,
hard
if you
enough.
Use your mental energy, you can crush this coconut.
You guys, he's probably
just,
over there resting
while
you're doing
this. He's
probably
just going to be like, this is something to make himself feel better because no one else will be able
to
crush,
check it out, guys. No, you could do this too if you try hard enough.
Guess you guys are kind of pussies. I don't know. I can do it. I can do it. I don't know.
You need bigger pythons.
you got to take the prayers, the training, and the vitamins. Otherwise, you're never going to be able to do this.
Yes.
And it really helps if you take a lot of fucking steroids.
Yes. Too. Well, I assume that's what he meant by vitamins.
Yeah, that is what.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what he was getting at. That's why he would always wink during those promos. And vitamins, you know? Vitamins.
Vitamins to inject into the muscular tissue of your bottom that fill you with testosterone.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what else happens during that. Oh, okay, well, Carl Weathers and Shannon Tweed go to rescue the gymnasts that are locked in that cell. And like you said, he has to use his minigun to blow a hole in the middle of the door because the bomb they use doesn't work.
That's right. Yeah.
To try to blow the door off. And the water is filling up in there and they're going to drown. So it's very tense, very tense. I love that Shannon Tweed, she has like a brief scuffle with some guys before that and she ends up with no shirt on. Oh yeah, because they send her down to distract the guards.
That's right.
She comes down in her underwear.
Oh, I've got a better idea. We'll do this quiet. Hey, they sent me, Fraker sent me down to relieve some stress. Oh, hey there, baby. And then he just beats her up. Or she beats him up,
She beats him up with her kickboxing skills. I did read apparently she learned kickboxing for a long time.
So. Yes, evidently. Billy Blanks had been her longtime coach. Right. So, yeah, yeah. They'd got in together.
Yeah, so yeah, very cool. She knew what she was doing. And then for the rest of the film, she just wears, like, she puts her pants back on, but she just wears the bra, like, top.
Well, she's so in a little bit of a time crunch.
Yeah,
so.
Right. You don't have time for that. She's going to let them titties fly. I like that they're nice and shiny. They're all, like, lubed up for the rest of the film.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess that's...
Cut. Okay, we're going to need somebody got in here. Lube them up. Lube those babies up.
I think she probably got her own team that comes with that. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Or she lubed them up herself. Who knows? Maybe she's hands-on.
Yeah, could be.
But yeah, definitely a selling feature at that point of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, those things need to be more shiny for the rest of this.
We really want our eyes to focus right there.
They rescue the gymnasts, of course, with no time to spare. Drain the water out. I really wish I'd noticed J-Law. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
That she's in there. And then Hogan and Billy Blanks have their big fight on the roof. He knocks him off the roof. Kind of a bad cut there where he falls. And
that's
then the
right.
Next scene, he's
just kind of crunched on
the ground below
in a heap.
What happens to Fraker? I can't think of what happens to Fraker.
He and Martin Cove get into it, don't they? Martin Cove is the one who's able to take him down.
Is that right? I feel like suddenly like that part of the movie is just
gone there's a from bunch that I forgot. Like after I was done, I'm like, hey, what happened to that girl from the plane? What happened to the diamonds? And I can't.
Wait,
you know what?
This movie left plot lines.
You know what, dude? I think Fraker might get away.
Did he get away? No. They go on the prop planes. Hogan chases him on the boat.
Right.
They get on the
and
plane.
Hogan,
Galindo and Fraker get on the plane and they have a hostage. He chases them on the boat. They have the one gymnast girl with them.
Yeah.
He chases them down. He ties his boat to their plane.
That's
so
right.
They can't
so
take
it slows
off.
Them down.
Yeah. I lost all this. There it is.
Yeah.
Thank God it showed up.
Yeah. No, I remember now.
And then.
Well, that's how memorable this movie is.
He has a very brief fight with Fraker.
That's
on the
right.
Boat, and then just like knocks him into the water where a shark gets him.
Right. It was a shark.
It's probably the same shark as from before.
Yeah. That's right. No, it was the shark necklace coming back to save him. Yeah. Okay. No, that's right.
And then Galindo's like, oh, I can pay you a lot of money. Just let me go. And he's like, you're going back to jail,
yes.
Galindo, brother.
Yeah. And then they talk about the new business venture that they're starting up, bringing SEAL tactics to the urban centers to help real people. And that never came to fruition. Yeah, well, exactly.
Situation.
It's like a 90s A-team.
Yeah, because he's quit the SEALs. Like he's like, I'm on my own. I do shit for myself now.
Yeah.
Mike McBride does stuff for Mike McBride.
Yeah, and Martin Cove's in with him.
Cove,
and
Tweed,
yeah.
Weathers.
So that's it.
Boom.
That's going to be their team.
Waiting to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably wouldn't have done that badly at the time
on
cable television.
Yeah, so it might have been something.
They didn't.
It's too bad.
They didn't go for it. Well,
yeah, so I enjoyed this movie a lot more than I probably should have. And again, I recognize the hypocrisy in a lot of the things that I was complaining about, The Beekeeper. I don't know why. For some reason, I just, it gave, like, I had a big smile watching all the cheesy acting, cheesy lines.
There's different expectations for this kind of thing than for an actual studio movie that you have to see in the movie theater, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, so let's talk numbers. I don't know what your numbers are. I'm going to put them into the Actiontron 2000.
So in the context of a lot of conversations in recent episodes about the unassailable list of perfection, how you guys have really come to terms with the fact that no one else can understand the holistic genre of action movies as well as this list. No one else has the inner vision, the insight to recognize that, you know, films like Crank or like Avengers Infinity, little known films like Avengers Infinity War are more meaningful to the action genre than say a Predator or a Commando. Predator's 45th on the list.
Oh my God.
And I think
you looked that up.
That's, I did.
It's so embarrassing.
And Crank and, Shoot 'em Up that you talked about recently are rated higher.
It's because we were just being such hard asses.
No,
when
man,
we started
the list
the show.
Is unassailable.
It's unassailable.
It is comprehensive.
No, that's not true because we're redoing
it's
Predator.
Beyond reproach.
And it's going like Predator should be in the top fucking 10.
Yeah, it should be top 10. Yeah,
but yeah, that's
so
that's
in that context. I took the scores, my initial scores, and I subtracted one from each of them because I enjoyed this too much. So my reaction, my actual reaction.
No.
Okay.
Plot.
Let's go for plot.
I want to put them all in.
So plot, I initially gave it 3, but I'm dropping down to 2. Plot's a 2. It's not good.
No, it is not.
Yeah. It's nonsensical, kind of bouncing. I mean, simple enough, but,
What do we got for action?
5.
5, okay.
So it was a 6, but I dropped it down to 5. I thought they did a lot for that $4 million budget.
Yeah,
the
you're
gun
not
was
wrong.
Cool.
You're not wrong.
The explosions were pretty cool. Quotes
pacing?
And tropes.
Oh, no, pacing.
Pacing. Pacing, I gave a 2. It was awful. So it was a 3 that got dropped to a 2.
It's pretty boring.
Every
time
they do the scuba scene where they're with the sharks, I'm like, oh my God, we're sitting through this again. It went on way too long. They're like, well, we shot all this underwater footage.
Cool,
we might as well
cool
throw
shit.
It in. And the music. We haven't even talked
about
the music.
It's like me with my vacation pics on Facebook. I'm like, well, I took all these cool pictures. I'm going to post them.
Exactly.
Nobody gives a fuck, man.
But the music when they're underwater is atrocious. Like, it just adds to the whole cheapness of everything. Like, it's really awful. The music was terrible.
It's a good thing we don't rate music. Okay, what do you got for quotes and tropes?
Quotes and tropes, I gave a 3. Initially, I gave a 4, but I like nothing to it but to do it. There's some, this card is for my enemies. Like, they're not good quotes.
Yeah, but
I
yeah,
like them in a cynical way.
I hear you.
Yeah.
And then, so your reaction?
Reaction's a 4. It was a 5, but dropped to 4.
Okay. All right, so reactions of 4. So that gives you a 3.2 overall.
Okay.
And for myself, I gave plot a 2 as well. I gave action a 3. Maybe that's a little low. I'll give it a 4 because you're right. They, you know, for the, considering the budget and everything, and that it's a made-for-TV movie, like, they do pretty well. Pacing, I gave a 3, so I'm actually one higher than you on that. I'm usually generous with pacing. Quotes and tropes, I gave a 2. I mean, I think the quotes are bad. I mean, you're right that there is a certain entertainment level in the badness.
For sure, yeah.
And I think there's a certain entertainment level in, you know, Hogan's wigs and all that kind of shit, for sure. my reaction is a 2, so I have a 2.6 overall. So that gives this movie a 2.9. So let's see where it ends up on the actual list. Okay, 2.9... All right, it looks like we're going to have a tie here.
Okay.
And we're going to be tied with Batman and Robin at 234.
Okay.
Cyborg, the Van Damme film. Bloodshot, the Vin Diesel movie.
Okay.
So those are our 3 ties right there.
I think
Batman
it's in
and
good
Robin,
company.
Cyborg, and Bloodshot.
That seems about where it belongs to me.
Yeah. Do you got a an instinct? Oh, have you seen all
I have
movies?
Not seen Bloodshot.
Never seen Bloodshot.
I listened to the episode.
Yeah, have you seen Cyborg?
I have Van seen Damme? Cyborg, but not since like 95 or whenever.
Not a great film. Not one of my favorite Van Damme's. People love that movie for some reason, but yeah. That's the one where everyone has guitar names and stuff.
Oh, that's right. Fender
and Rickenbacker. Stuff like Gibson Rickenbacker or some shit like that. I love Batman and Robin precisely because of how fucking terrible it is.
Yeah, I haven't seen it through that lens. I only saw Batman and Robin like in initial release when everyone was hoping it was going to be good. So I've never looked at it through that lens of trying to scrape some enjoyment out of it. So I don't know. I guess just based on your word, I'd have to put it behind. Just based on how much I enjoyed them, I'd put it in front. But yeah, since there's only two of us, the tie would have to go to the veteran. So it would probably put it behind that.
We split like from where I put it, from where you would put it.
And well, I know, but if I put it in front and you put it behind, it can't have a tie. It's got to be somewhere, right?
Well, I would put it behind Bloodshot.
Oh, is that right? Okay,
Bloodshot's a shitty movie, but it's, you know, it's a more professionally made film.
Okay.
It's just better, even though it sucks.
All right.
So I would actually put it at 237 behind Bloodshot, but you would put it ahead of Batman and Robin? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Well, I enjoyed it.
Okay. So I guess we would put it then behind Cyborg and ahead of Bloodshot, and that would be the new, because there's no way to, I mean, technically it would be tied with Cyborg and Bloodshot.
Yeah.
We'll just put it between them for the hell of it.
Excellent.
And so it'll be the new 236 on the list. But it's ahead of Michael Bay's Transformers.
Is it really?
two ahead of Michael Bay's Transformers.
Wow. Yeah, that one was done recently.
A few ahead of No Holds Barred. Oh, ahead of Time Cop. That's not nice.
There's a lot of Van Damme's here at the bottom of the barrel.
Well, I mean, Time Cop, again, not a great movie, but it's pretty fun compared to some of this shit that it's sitting
and it's got the classic Van Damme buns, the mid-90s Van Damme buns.
I will say this did fall behind. Ahead of Batman and Robin was 1996's Skyscraper starring Anna Nicole Smith, and this is this is very much the same kind of movie, although that has a lot more titties in it.
So it is in good company then. This is, yeah. I told you the list was unassailable.
So there it is, new 236, Shadow Warriors Assault on Devil's Island. Well, thanks a lot, Andy, for coming on.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for choosing such a fine picture. It was great to see Carl Weathers so soon after his passing here.
XBC Lion, Carl Weathers. XBC
Lion, Carl Weathers. So thanks for listening, guys. Check us out on Patreon. If you want to check out our first 200 episodes, they're on there now for only a couple bucks a month. You can listen to those. We also have bonus content on there. We're going to be working on getting more bonus content on there because we're always really slow at that. You can also, depending on which level you join up at, you can get us to watch movies that you want us to watch. That's Action Action Podcast on Patreon. We're on Instagram. Andy's showing me his Action Action shirt.
Don't forget the merch, fellas.
The merch is on there too.
There's Gore Horror t-shirts.
Yes, we got it all. Check it out. There's a real cool Hard Target shirt too. Thanks for listening. Check out the BFOP network and we'll catch you later.
Peace. Bye.
He's got skies.